Hey, everybody. A revolution is happening in the country. Some might call it the Cold Revolution. We dive through a history of revolutions in the world and how it applies today, inspired by Tucker Carlson's phenomenal monologue. If you want to support our program and the work we are doing, please go to charliekirk.com/support. Chip in whatever you can to get behind the work we are doing. Just some of the testimonials are amazing that are flying in at charliekirk.com/support of how we are persuading thousands of young people to believe in freedom in our country every single day. So if you want to get behind us, it's charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, your feedback, your comments, your concerns. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. If you're a high school or a college student, a parent of a young person, encourage them to get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Revolution is here. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
I was watching Tucker Carlson's monologue last evening, and I have to say it's one of the best monologues that I've ever seen him do. And that is a very high bar, because his monologue every night is one of the most thoughtful, intelligent, and wise pieces of television out there. And so Tucker makes the argument, and we're going to play the clip here in just a second, that the current revolution that we are living through, which we are living through a revolution, is unlike anything that Americans are used to. Instead of living through a revolution that is the workers or the proletariat against the bourgeoisie, it's the powerful versus the workers. This revolution that we are living through, and make no mistake, we are living through a revolution. It hasn't hit critical mass yet, but if you look carefully and closely, it's there. But this particular moment, which is around the idea of social justice and racial justice, is actually been engineered by people with a very specific agenda. This is not an organic revolution. This is not something that is authentic. Instead, it's as if this was built in a laboratory, as if this was designed by an architect to try and accomplish a goal. What is that goal? Why are so few people talking about it? Well, let's listen to what Tucker Carlson had to say last evening. Play tape.
Now, the first and most obvious question we might have asked at the time, and no one ever asked this, but it's clear, why was a 46-year-old man reduced to passing badly counterfeited $20 bills in a convenience store in the middle of the day? George Floyd was unemployed. Why was he unemployed? How many other people like George Floyd are unemployed, and why? Now, that would have been an interesting conversation. It might have been a fruitful conversation for all of us, but we didn't have it, and we didn't have it by design.
And there's another clip here that Tucker mentions the true roots of the revolution.
What hasn't changed at all is the kind of people who go to Yale in the first place. They're rich kids from rich families who plan on staying rich. Not speculation. Here are the numbers. Before COVID, the median family income in the United States was about 65 grand a year. At Yale, it's three times that. The median family income of a Yale University student is $192,000 a year. That's the median. At the University of Pennsylvania, it's about $196,000 a year. At Brown University in Providence, it's $204,000.
So Tucker is making the argument that real change, if you're talking about economic change, has been superficial. There's another clip, but I'll just summarize it because we don't have it, which is this. Tucker made a small, short, not small, but a short remark that actually deserves deep and thorough exploration and explanation. He said what makes this current revolution different is that it's the rich, the elite, and the powerful that are trying to pummel the people that have nothing. So when you study the history of revolutions, the ones that we know best, they are typically ones that are bottom up. The French Revolution, for example, inspired by Robespierre, the Jacobins, against the French monarchy, the idea of a guillotine, the idea of mob justice. In fact, the Jacobins were so insistent on trying to revolutionize the world around them, they actually recreated time. They went to a 10-day-a-week calendar, and they started over at year zero. That's how committed they were at revolutionizing the status quo of the world around them. They were heavily inspired by Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who, of course, valued the primitive over the civilized, the infant over the adult, and was a harsh critic of the beginning stages of the Enlightenment and Western culture. How about the Russian Revolution? This was also bottom-up. The Russian Revolution, of course, led by Vladimir Lenin against the Romanov dynasty, who were running Russia for many generations prior. Vladimir Lenin was a trained Marxist, actually was in prison in Germany, and as one of the tactical moves to end World War I, was released from that prison in Germany, was put on a train to Russia as a way to try to weaken the Eastern Front and revolutionize and bring this communist Marxist idea, which, by the way, was never really tried up until the Russian Revolution, into practice. Bottom up. You ever hear the expression, storming of the Bastille? That was the French Revolution. The idea of challenging the industrial class was the Russian Revolution. Now, by no means am I praising these revolutionary efforts, but they had a common through line. A vocal, charismatic leader embracing a flawed and immoral people-centered ideology was able to build up massive support for a very specific goal. How about the Chinese Revolution, led by Mao Zedong, otherwise known as the Great Leap Forward? Post-World War II, China was a large, heavily populated, poor country with massive inequality. Mao Zedong, almost through a military coup, took power and enacted some of the most aggressive, and still to this day, China lives under most of these efforts, whether it be the implementation of the Red Guard, the Little Red Book, the Mao Code of Ethics. It was almost the complete and total destruction of Chinese culture prior to Mao Zedong. So just a French Revolution, bottom up, Robespierre, Jacobin, we're going to go after the powerful people. Russian Revolution, we're going to go after the Romanovs. Chinese Revolution, we're going to go after the current military generals that are running the country. How about the Cuban Revolution? Fidel Castro, a communist-trained Soviet military leader, saw massive inequality in Cuba, saw an opportunity after a very, very bitter conflict, took power in Cuba. Bottom up, bottom up, bottom up, bottom up. French, Russian, Chinese, Cuban. Now, of course, the American Revolution was also bottom up. But what made the American Revolution completely and totally different than the Cuban, the Chinese, the Russian, and the French was that the American founders, when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, they're not asking for a takeover of a pre-existing government. They wanted separation to create their own. Big difference. Whereas Robespierre or Lenin, Mao or Castro, they wanted to actually control the current government. Founding fathers never wanted to actually control the British monarchy. They wanted to create something new. But still, the American founders in the American Revolution were believers in bottom-up change. We are going to get the people convinced of our policies, of our ideas, of our philosophy, and we'll be able to be hopefully successful from that point. Now, not every revolution works, by the way. There's plenty of revolutions that are failures. But the most famous revolutions, for better and most times for worse, are ones where powerful people are the ones that are being challenged, not the ones that are doing the challenging. And this distinction is really, really important because what Tucker highlights here in just a couple sentences, and I'm going to build this out into a much broader thesis, is that what we are living through right now is a piece of political theater. This very well could have been developed in a form of a political laboratory against the American people. This is critical because the sooner the American people realize that you're being played by the trillionaire class, the sooner their aims and their objectives will fail. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, the Fiat, Kia, and models such as the Pacific XT5, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or just, quite honestly, irrelevant and intimidating questioning from people that want to fix your car? Why wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer? Well, here's the cool thing. I am now offering you a way to get all the parts you need. Why would you choose to spend 30, 50, or 100% more on the exact same auto part at a chain store than on a new car dealership? Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody. That's right, everyone. It does not require a membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine and control modules, brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in just a few clicks. So go to RockAuto.com, write Charlie Kirk in there, how did you hear about us section. So if you guys have any parts to your car and you want to support our podcast that you might need, parts to your car you might need, go to rockauto.com, use the promo code CharlieKirk to how did you hear about us, and let them know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. I think we found the Tucker Carlson tape that I am expanding on. Let's go to this. But before I do, I just want to say this is one of Tucker Carlson's best monologues. There was so much there. It was a 9-minute monologue that, quite honestly, I could just expand on what he's saying because I agree with all of it in a 9-part lecture series. But this part in particular is absolutely brilliant. Play tape.
Now, this is different from what's happened in other countries. Unlike the revolutions in most places, in America, the working class is not the hero of this story. Our working class is the villain. This is not a proletarian revolution. It's a revolution from above. It's aimed straight downward. And you can tell by who's running it. College professors write the radical literature. Politicians put their words into practice. The biggest companies in the world pay for all of it.
It's perfectly said. So every story needs a hero and a villain. In this case, the villain is the carpenter, the electrician, the muscular class. You know, the guy that doesn't own a lot, but goes to church and raises his family, does things the right way, but might not be adequately woke enough and definitely does not have the right political ideology. That's the villain. The hero, in this case, is a combination of the benevolent trillionaire and the ever angry, ungrateful, motivated social justice warrior activist that's been trained on a college campus to go revolutionize the country. So as we analyze the American, Cuban, Chinese, Russian, and French revolution, they all have a through line. There was a breaking point where the working class or the greater population said, enough, we want a change. We want something different. Now, in the French, Russian, Chinese, and Cuban example, something horrific followed. So this is not necessarily a pro-revolutionary argument I'm making. It's simply an analysis. Edmund Burke, the father of American conservatism, would be a critic of many of these revolutions. He understood the American Revolution. He was a harsh critic of the French Revolution. Whereas Thomas Paine was pro-American Revolution, also pro-French Revolution. He thought it was time for massive upheaval. It's very interesting to read the dynamics between Thomas Paine and Edmund Burke, different podcasts, different radio show for a different time. But what's happening here right now in our country, and Tucker touched on this, but then he moved on, is this revolution in America, the revolution that has now taken over Coca-Cola, where they are teaching all of their employees, quote, all white people are racist, that to be white means to be arrogant, oppressive, and divisive. And I'm quoting directly from the racial sensitivity training put on by Robin DiAngelo at Coca-Cola. This revolution is a preemptive revolution. This revolution reminds me of what the Central Intelligence Agency did in Iran. You see, this revolution is a domestic equivalent of what our intelligence agencies have been doing all across the world the last couple decades. Now, we've gone into great detail on our podcast. I encourage all of you to check it out because there's a lot of content we put on our podcast feed that we do not always talk on our radio show or our live stream. But what happened in Iran in the 1970s, I think? That's right. Yeah, 1970s. In the Iranian Revolution, where our own CIA denied it at the time, but our CIA was involved in a coup displacing a democratically elected leader by the, I always butcher the pronunciation, Mossadegh, to reinstitute an unpopular leader, the Shah, who came from the traditional Persian bloodline, which then led to, I believe it's called the White Revolution. I could be wrong. I'm just drawing on memory here. But the then pro-Ayatollah revolution, the Islamic revolution, that then turned Iran from what's traditionally a secular Persian empire to an Islamic theocratic dictatorship. The point is that the Central Intelligence Agency was behind all of this. It was a top-down revolution. The will of the Iranian people was thwarted for an internationalist goal and aim. It ended up in total chaos, and you got something worse. This is very similar to what we're living through right now in our country. We're very powerful people that have played war games across the planet are now saying they don't want America to go a certain direction. We've been exploring this idea of how certain revolutions are different. And what we are living through in our country right now is a quiet woke revolution that has been engineered and is being orchestrated by the very same people that are proponents of the Great Reset, private property, abolition, the Davos crew. And what's very interesting about what we are living through in our country, whether it be the proliferation of critical race theory, the idea that math is racist, which is something that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is funding directly, the idea that math is racist, is that this is categorically different than almost every other revolution, successful revolution in human history. The most famous, of course, being French, Russian, Chinese, Cuban, and American Revolution, which were bottom-up revolutions. One of them I support, the other ones I do not. Because 4 out of 5, the French, Russian, Chinese, and Cuban Revolution, was not around a separation against tyranny. It was about a takeover of a current power structure and a disintegration of whatever traditions might have come before them. But this revolution is very unique. This is about the powerful trying to destroy the weak. Now, this moment we're living through right now is partly because of President Trump, because of how effective he was, because of how he exposed the other side. It's also largely because of college ideology, the college campuses that have taken over the rest of the country. What happens on college campuses is not stay on college campuses. They go to corporate boardrooms. They go to the halls of Congress. College ideology has been exported to every major power center in the country. And so I was drawing the comparison between what was happening in Iran at the planning of the Central Intelligence Agency of America with the British intelligence agencies, where the will of the people was thwarted for a specific geopolitical aim. We can look also at Nicaragua, very similarly, Vietnam. The idea of the rich and the powerful trying to influence a certain government is not new to our foreign policy history. But what is new is it happening here and happening so quickly. This entire moment that we're living through can be summarized as this. The powerful and the elite are afraid that their plunder is coming to an end. So they are mobilizing shock troops on their behalf to preempt the uprising. This is why the corporations are so heavily funding critical race theory, woke ideology like Coca-Cola. It's not because they actually believe it. It's also partly because the corporations want to create a distraction away from their unethical practices, their relationship with China. But in addition to that, the ruling class is perpetually anxious that if they do not preempt the next revolution, if they are not involved in it on the right side of it, they will get devoured. And so in anticipation that the people are going to rise up and demand equal access to tech companies, demand that China no longer makes our critical manufacturing components, to demand that vitamin C is no longer made in Wuhan, but maybe made in West Virginia, the elites decided to get ahead of it. How do they do that? Create a hero-villain dynamic, as Tucker Carlson wonderfully said, where the villain is anyone that works with their hands in the muscular class, that didn't go to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, or Stanford, that lives in the middle part of the country, might own a firearm or two, goes to church once a week. That's the villain. The hero is Chris Cuomo. The hero is Mark Zuckerberg. The hero is the people that run our communication class and the trillionaire class partnering together to push forward this sinister ideology. This is a top-down revolt, not a bottom-up revolt. You understand how rare this is. The only place that this has happened in recent history is when our own government, the CIA, goes into other countries and tries to displace the will of their people. The working class here is the enemy. Now, but there are two things about revolutions that I believe the experts, and I use that word in quotations, know, but they're afraid to admit. Number one, revolutions are very hard to control. Revolutions can easily get out of hand. What the trillionaire class does not realize, what the academic elites do not realize, is that this pent-up anger and frustration that they are now not just allowing to occur, but they are subsidizing it. They are financing it. They are supporting it. Will come for them eventually. As soon as you double and triple down on this sort of revolutionary fervor, there is no don't eat me card that you can play. They will come for everyone, including their own. We're already seeing that in the Andrew Cuomo story in New York. Andrew Cuomo is a white man, older, and is in the way of some of the more woke people like Letitia James taking power. Andrew Cuomo would be protected in a traditional anti-Trump, anti-conservative political environment. But now that this revolution is underway, it's time for them to start putting points on the board. And points on the board means not just removing Republicans, but also removing anyone that might represent an ideology what they would call whiteness. I want to play another clip from Tucker Carlson where he touches on this specifically in regards to colleges. Let's play one of the ones we haven't played yet.
But wait a second, you ask, says the Democratic donor. If the Honduran immigrants get into Colombia, who's going to work at the chicken plants? Oh, good question. We nominate the children of New York Times editors. Now, New York Times editors might not like this arrangement very much. They may incite revolution at work, but at the same time, they are fanatically intent on sending their own kids to Yale, and they will do absolutely anything to get them into Yale. They definitely don't want their kids working at chicken plants. They want them working at McKinsey.
So Tucker, in the second part of his monologue, started to get somewhat sardonic and sarcastic, saying, okay, if you really want the revolution, then let's make a new rule saying that only people that have never gone to college can go to Princeton, Yale, Harvard. Basically, Tucker was playing out in what would seem as to be an extreme result of the revolution, what is actually a logical conclusion, what's going to happen. And what Tucker is saying, and he's exactly right, is that the people that are designing, finance, subsidizing, and supporting this current moment in America, they don't actually believe what they are saying. They're acting as if this is a war game of something they're doing in Nicaragua or Iran. They don't actually want this current movement to come to their doorstep. For example, the New York Times opinion editor that is publishing story after story about how white people are racist, white privilege is everywhere, critical race theory is awesome. They themselves are going to do everything they can that their son or daughter gets into Yale and Harvard. And who cares if I have to do something like cut a corner, write a letter, or call in a favor? I'm going to use whatever I can to get that done for me. So what Tucker is basically saying, and he's exactly right, is that the powerful people that are now vocally and financially putting their resources behind this idea that America is racist, bigoted, homophobic, and is in need of a massive revolution, they themselves will pay a price. And quite honestly, I hope they do. I hope they actually have to live under the ideology that they are now tacitly supporting. The question is, why are they doing this? If it's not beneficial to them or even their own livelihood, number one, virtue signaling. It makes people feel good. You see, part of the DNA of a leftist is the constant yearn and need for upheaval. The left does not build new things. They don't start new businesses. They don't create families or make churches stronger. Instead, a true leftist, a revolutionary, a Rousseauian Marxist, almost a Nietzsche-believing leftist, will want widespread upheaval. Creation is not something that especially young social justice warrior, critical race theory believing activists are focused on. Starting a family? Starting a business? Taking a risk? No, I'm much more focused on smashing a window, getting someone fired, or destroying anything that might exist. Now, why is this important? Well, this is very important because what we are living through right now is going to be looked at by historians, and we don't know how this actually is going to play out, as a uncertain, turbulent, and chaotic moment. But my hypothesis is that I believe that this will hurt the left and the Democrats far more than it will hurt conservatives. This failed attempt to play a war game in America using corporations and the institutions and the academy and the civil service and the media together to almost act as if we are a third world country where they can get a certain charismatic leader into power just because we pull the right instruments, the right strings of power. I believe it will fail miserably. And I think that it will almost give conservatives and Republicans an opportunity to win elections, not just a little bit, but a lot. And I think Democrats are going to have to explain and defend an indefensible ideology that is not rooted in reason, but rooted in outrage. That's not rooted in logic, but is rooted in chaos. The sooner we pinpoint this and we explain it, that you are being manipulated. If you think you're going on the side of the street saying America is racist, you are a pawn of a corporate CEO that just wants you to be distracted while the real plunder is occurring. It may be a cliche when you say you are what you eat, but it's the absolute truth. Eating the right foods ensure you get the right nutrients into your body that are essential to maintain your health and vitality. It's also true if you are not getting enough fruits and veggies every day, you could seriously be deficient in those nutrients that are so vital to your health. Can you imagine how you'd feel if you were eating 10 servings of fruits and veggies every day? Do what I do, because I could tell you from personal experience, it is a game changer, because I take 6 daily capsules from Balance of Nature. Just knowing I'm getting the vital nutrients sourced from 31 fruits and veggies every day makes a huge difference in my life. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. For a limited time, all new preferred customers will receive an additional 35% off and free shipping on your Balance of Nature order. Use discount code CHARLIE. Call 800-284-6851 or go to balanceofnature.com and use the discount code CHARLIE. That's balanceofnature.com, discount code CHARLIE. Email us your questions, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. We got a question where they say, Charlie, do you think this is why the left is eating their own? Very similar point that I was making. My French Revolution history is passable, but it is not fluent. It's not as up to date as it should be. French Revolution actually ended up in Napoleon taking power because there was such chaos. And that's what you get, by the way, when you have a revolution. Eventually, a dictator or an autocrat will take power because you are not able to design a sustainable system of government around perpetual outrage. That's why the American founding, landing the plane, metaphorically before planes existed, without crashing it and actually building a functioning government is incredible. It is the exception, not the rule. To actually have a functioning government post-revolution is very, very rare. It's not impossible. It's happened other times around the world. But the fact that America revolted, won, and then built something new and exceptional can only be explained by the founding fathers' brilliance, their understanding of biblical texts, and the Enlightenment. However, French Revolution. The French Revolution came for a variety of different reasons. The French revolutionaries pushed back up against the aristocracy and the monarchy of France. And Robespierre was the one that led the Reign of Terror. Again, French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau was a main philosophical inspiration behind the French Revolution. Robespierre led the Jacobins. The Jacobins were kind of the street gang of the French Revolution. They were the ones that actually did the decapitations, the one that oversaw the guillotines. The French Revolution was no joke. It was a bloody, terrible moment in world and human history. 17,000 people were publicly executed. But not to mention what happened after that, because of the chaos, then Napoleon took power and tried to take over all of Europe, was unsuccessful because he tried to go into Russia and eventually went into exile. But do you know what happened to Robespierre? Robespierre, who was the leader. Robespierre, who was the charisma behind the French Revolution, the guy that had all the ideas. They killed him. And they just didn't just kill him privately. They killed him publicly. And when he was killed, the crowd cheered for 15 minutes. Like, ding dong, the witch is dead. He went from the hero of the French Revolution to the villain. Like that. I'm going to read right here. The next day, which is after something, Robespierre and 21 of his supporters were sent to the guillotine. The executioner tore off the bandage covering his jaw, causing him to cry out in agony before the falling blade silenced him forever. According to witnesses, the crowd cheered 15 minutes at his demise. He had been shot in the jaw when he was arrested. So he went from the hero to the villain. The current powerful versus the weak revolution happening in America, they are taking a major risk. And they're taking this risk because they are afraid the alternative of doing nothing would result in them having less power and less money and less control. But it is more likely than not that the puppet master revolutionaries, the digital industrial oligarchy, that this is going to, I don't like this term because it's overused, but it's perfect here. It's going to backfire on them. Again, I'm not a fan of that term. It's overused. I try not to use terms that are overused. I think we did a whole thing on that the other day. At the end of the day, let's have a conversation. We'll circle back. The people that are enacting and financing this are going to become victims of the tools of their own creation. Robespierre created the guillotine and he died at the guillotine. Robespierre fomented the mob and he was killed by the mob. The corporate elites have created this woke mass and they will be displaced by this woke mass. And guess what? The rest of the country will not be with them. And if the things play out the way I believe they will be a permanent, angry, small sector of American society on the coasts, and we will win, and not just win a little bit, but win big. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, and please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. God bless. Speak to you soon.